I'd like to introduce Jay. Would you please come speak for us?
I feel like I should be taking off my clothes with that kind of... I think I spoke out in that pavilion two years. I don't even know anymore. I don't even know if I need to speak into this thing. Oh, let me decompress for a second. Feels good to be here. Feels good to be alive. I don't know if anybody Instagrams. I found that technology. And a girl works in our office, and she said it would be a good way to network our business. We take down barns, log cabins. Basically, like when people ask me what I do, you kind of read your audience, you know. But people go, "What are you doing?" I go, "Well, I used to sell weed, and now I sell wood." You know, "Hey, what kind of wood do you want?" And yeah. But anyway, what a day. You know, I have a business, and today I had a delivery into Brooklyn. And I'm not a city guy, you know. And so I go, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, go over to the shop. The guys that work there got the wood loaded up on the flatbed. It was all ready to go. But we've been having some trouble with the diesel truck. You know, it's cold. And last night I asked Louie. I said, "Louie, how's the truck?" "Oh, it's good. It's good." I said, "It started up pretty good." "Oh, good, good." I get there this morning, and it's like, rant. I'm like, and, you know, I just went to church the other day, and like, you know, and they say the same thing. We, you know, God will not give you any more than you can handle, you know. And I was just like, and it just, and I was like, you know, and then I checked the forecast, and you know, maybe we'll push it off a day, and then the forecast seems like it was getting worse and worse. Like today was like the window to do it. So, you know, I don't shrink from it, you know. I just roll the truck up, put the jumper cables on it, you know, and rain. And it's like, oh, my God. You know, I can't tell you how many times I wiggled those jumper cables. And but I knew it was the starter because I had tried starting it in a cold, like, a couple days ago. And I kept just cranking it over until I heard crackling. Which is the wires in my starter starting to smoke, you know. So, but I knew I had pretty much fried my starter. So anyway, I got the truck running, and anyway, yeah, I had to tarp everything. It was all ready for a dry delivery, you know. When the weather's nice, we have a flatbed and the wood stays on there. But it was raining, so now I have to wrap. So it's all ready to go. Like, you know, my guy's got it all. Now I'm undoing all the straps, you know. And then I lift it up with my big machine, and I wrap it up like a Christmas gift, and, you know, make sure there's no water going to get in, and off to Brooklyn I go. And the roads were horrible, you know. And then, of course, I'm following a GPS, and then I get in there near Brooklyn, and somehow I got to get across a bridge that no longer is open. You know, because our infrastructure's falling apart, and but my GPS doesn't know that, and I don't have a map anymore. You know, my GPS makes me retarded. You know, like if my phone failed and my GPS failed at the same time, I wouldn't even know. You know, you could send a helicopter for me, and I wouldn't know how to guide you. There's a railroad track on my left-hand side. So I did a couple loops in I think I was in Newark, you know. But anyway, the delivery was made, and it's amazing, you know, because you know, the guy who's 50% down, the rest upon delivery, you know, and this And this guy, you know, I pull up with my truck. And I mean, of course, you're on a street in Brooklyn, so there's no parking, you know. It's like, and this guy's just like cramming me into the side of this little road that's no... Anyway, and he's like, wood come off. And I was like, no, you pay, wood come off. You know, but anyway, it all worked out, you know. And then I had I love the architecture in there. Came home and, but anyway, why I say that is because there was a time in my life, early this morning would have ruined my day. And, you know, today, you know, I just roll with things. I love when I see people get frustrated with stuff. You know, like in AA, we say don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff. Now, I'm not saying I can't get tangled up in my underwear, because I do. Believe me, I do. You know, depending on what day or moment you get me in, you know, you could get the spiritual J, you know, or the J that's just absolutely so self-centered with fear and, you know. But let's go back to the beginning. So I was adopted into a Jewish family. Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm an alcoholic. Oi. So I'm this Norwegian kid adopted into a Jewish family. Now, I'm not trying to be funny. This is just the truth. They were a poor Jewish family. Yeah. I never heard of that. You know? And we used to go to family functions, and they're driving around in all these, like, BMWs, and, like, we're rolling up in this Ford station wagon with holes in the floor. I remember dropping my pencils, you know, pretending like we're in a bomber, you know, I'm dropping bombs at them. That thing was a roach. And, you know, like, dropping me off at school, like, you know, like, really, like, 200 yards up the road. I'm like, we're cool. We're cool. No, I'll take it. No, I'm good. I'll walk the rest. Exercise. That thing was. But we moved out of Philadelphia when I was 5. We moved up to Buckingham into the country, which probably saved my life because you actually had to, like, think about things before you went and did it. You know, down the city, man, there's, like, too many bars and too much stuff. But not that it didn't almost kill me in the country, you know, just... I just accumulated a few more DUIs because down in the city, you don't have to, you know, drive. Up here in the country, you got to drive or hop on a horse. Didn't have a horse. You know, so I'm in this family that I don't feel like I fit in. All I can describe my younger life was, it's like, even when I go back to my parents, and my dad's dead, and he's my adopted dad, and he died of cirrhosis of the liver, pancreatic cancer. You know, he was one of them guys who'd, like, he hated my mother, you know. So he'd, like, go hide in his car in the garage. I always thought he was listening to the Phillies game. He was in there drinking his ass off. That's what he was doing. But anyway, so I grew up in this family. I never felt like I fit in. School was not good at school. I was one of those kids, like, staring out the window, man. Couldn't wait to get out of school and, like, you know, run around in the woods. You know, and I didn't know what I had. Like, I think they call it ADD today, you know, like, huh? What? You know, somebody got me a button one time and says, some people think I have ADD. Oh, hey, look, a chicken, you know, but, all I can describe growing up as a kid, it's like, I don't know if you're going to follow me on this one. Like in Spanish class, I'll never forget, like there was a kid in my Spanish class and like he was upset. And it's weird because like, it's like I felt it. I felt his upsetness. But I didn't know it was just his. And like, I thought it was something wrong with me. You know? And then when I walked into my parents' house, like I didn't have to hear anything or see anything. I felt it. I could feel like the mood. And so I didn't know what that was. You know, all I know is, you know, I'm a kid. I don't know what the heck I have or what's, you know, all I know is I feel a lot of things and it's very uncomfortable. You know, so at the age of 13 in the Jewish religion, you have a bar mitzvah and you become a man. I was the furthest thing. I'm 45. I'm the furthest thing from a man at 45. I mean, let alone 13. But you got to have this big party, and I drank for the, other than Manischewitz, little glasses of wine taste like badass grape juice. But when I was 13, they had a big party for me, and I actually drank alcohol, and I consumed it. You know how everybody thinks it's funny, you know, grandpa, you know, gives me some gin, somebody else gives me this, somebody gives me that. And then grandpa stuffed a cigar in my mouth, and game over. Because I didn't know you. I was like, I turned every shade of green, threw up in every sink. Like, it was nuts. I was throwing up out of the side of Grandpa's car. And I didn't touch alcohol from 13 until I was 15. And then 15, I was home alone. This was very rare because I was one of those kids. You know, like dad was afraid the house was going to burn down. I got those kids right now. I got four of those kids. Like, I'm home, there's like, my one kid's like, Mom, can you get me blue tip matches? You know, the light anywhere matches. It's like I walk out into the pool room and there's like spent matches everywhere. And I'm like, oh my God, it's me. It's me. Where is me? That's my son Cooper. He's 14. What an ass. You know? But anyway, he's just like me. He's a good kid. But anyway, so growing up, I don't know where, but I never felt like I fit in. So 13, I drank. Didn't drink till I was 15. I'm home alone. I was watching some flick on TV, and I remember the teenagers were like slinging six packs and racing around in cars. And so I went and I started. My parents had a lot of alcohol, you know. And I went and mixed rum and cokes, and I drank them slow. It wasn't like my bar mitzvah where everybody was just throwing crap down my throat. Like, I sat there and sipped on it. And all I can, like, describe it as is, like, the squirrel in my head that was like, like, kicked back, put his feet up, was like, all right, this is all right, you know, And I didn't know that I, like, used alcohol medicinally, but I did. Like, once it calmed my head down like that, like, I felt at peace. I even heard somebody up at this podium say it was my first spiritual experience. And I like that because it was. I was so uncomfortable in my own skin. And as soon as I, you know, started drinking that rum and coke, I felt like somebody had thrown a warm blanket around me and said, hey, kid, it's going to be okay. And I wasn't like one of them, you know, you ever see the health, you know, we saw these like films in health class where like, you know, a kid was sneaking booze into school in his thermos. Like, I wasn't that, I didn't do that, you know. Actually, I thought it was really stupid. I was like, just don't go to school. I remember kids walking up to me and they're like, dude, I'm tripping. And I'm like, you're in school, dumbass. It just never made sense to me. But so I didn't drink like every day, and I went to tech school because my grades were so poor. They were like, this kid needs to work with his hands, you know. And I went to tech school for carpentry, and I learned how to smoke pot. That's just the way it went. I smoked a lot of pot, and I had enough common sense to not use machinery. I saw my buddy take his thumb off. Yeah, he's like, dude, I can't wait till they legalize marijuana. Like, a lot of fingers, a lot of, like, you know, I can just imagine a kid at the McDonald's. He's like, look at, dude, I just fried my fingers, man. Like, dude, Krispy Kremes. Think about it, folks. Yeah. I'm an advocate for not legalizing marijuana. I know what it did to me. I never ran a stop sign drinking. I ran some stop signs smoking dope, though. You know, it's like, you know, sitting back. Hey, just what? Crazy. But anyway, so I smoked pot a lot. I smoked like every day. I was that kid that woke up in the morning, smoked pot, got in my buddy's car to go to school, smoked pot, snuck into the bathroom, stood on the toilet, smoked it. You know, I was just so smoked up all the time. And then it turned on me. So I think it was my end of my 11th grade year. I got in this crazy car wreck. Because me on booze and weed, not a good combination. And like I'm one of those chemically challenged guys. You know, all my buddies were like, let's give them a line of cocaine and see what happens. Like they gave me so much acid, like I never saw anything. These guys were like, look, dude, look. And I'm like, look at what? I sat at a picnic table one time for like an hour and like everybody was enjoying the picnic table. And I was like, dude, I don't know about you guys, but I got to go do something. This is nuts. But just shit affected me differently. And I don't know where I'm going with that. But anyway, so yeah, it happens. They call that lapsus in your synapses. And school. So school I did very poorly in. The classes I was interested in, I did very well. I liked reading. I liked writing. I was very quiet. People that know me today don't believe that. You know? Like, I was a very quiet kid because if I didn't say nothing, like, you didn't have any ammunition to make fun of me. Like, so I was quiet. You put the chest out a little bit, and that was it, you know? And, yeah, school was bad. God, I hated school. I graduated, though. I was not a bad kid. I was just a very stoned kid, you know, and I missed a lot of school. And the teachers, my senior year, they said, Jay, you've missed Mr. Chaikin, they called me. Mr. Chaikin, you have missed 30 days of school, unexcused. 10 is an automatic repeat that grade. And they're like, if you just show up to school every day, you can graduate. I thought that was one heck of a deal, you know? I was like, you got it. And I did. I showed up every day. But I quit. When I quit smoking pot, I got in a real bad car wreck. And I quit smoking pot because I thought pot was the problem. And but the problem was I smoked all the time. So I started drinking a little bit more. But it wasn't like that wake up in the morning drinking thing. It was like going out with the guys on Friday. And then Friday led to Saturday. Saturday, and it just, you know. And I was a kind of, my dad had a lot of bourbon in the house. So I got a taste for old granddad, wild turkey. Like, this is the crazy thing. Like, the kids were drinking beers. I was like, no, man, have some of this stuff. You know, they say liquor's quicker. Because, like, I'm driving around in the backwoods of Bucks County, man. Like, you're drinking lots of beers. You got to pull over and pee. Yeah. And I had some common sense. I wasn't the sharpest tack in a box. But, man, you pull over a lot on the sides of the road. Police look for that. You know? Huh? So I drank a lot of whiskey, and my tolerances got pretty high. You know, the same old, I mean, I lied my butt off. I grew marijuana on my parents' roof. I mean, I was just a lost soul. I had a girlfriend, and I didn't understand, like it says in the big book, it's, you know, like not drinking, I never thought of cheating on my girlfriend. But like when I drank, like I was the main actor in my own play, you know, and like it just sucked because the thing is I was raised as dysfunctional as my family was. They raised me with morals and I knew what morals were. So like I would drink and I would cheat on my girlfriend and then the next day I would feel guilt, shame, and remorse. Now right away I didn't know what it was. I just know I felt bad. And now the only thing I knew to get rid of that feeling was what? Oh, yeah, drink again. Oh, yeah, do more things and accumulate more guilt, shame, and remorse. So I was out there for 12 years. I gave up all the drugs. I did a lot of – because I smoked pot, quit pot, switched to alcohol. But along my professional drinking career, like I didn't wake up in the morning and go like, hey, I think today's a good day to do a line of cocaine. Hey, today's a good day to drop a hit of acid. I was not that guy. If I was sober, I'd be like, no, I don't want that shit. What the hell? But if I had half a fifth of whiskey in me, it was game on. Like, I drink a lot of Red Bull nowadays, and people that don't know my past are like, have you ever hit that up with vodka? And I'm like, the last thing you wanted me to be is more awake while I was drunk. I got enough trouble without being more awake. And, you know, because I hang with a crowd that's, you know, my kids are in sports and stuff, so I hang with a crowd that I go to picnics and barbecues, and, you know, it's the same people now, so they know me. But when they first met me, they're like, you know, we're throwing horseshoes. They're like, you want a beer? I was like, you want to see me naked? I did. You think that I am not embellishing, or they're like, nah, maybe not. I was like, good, 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 good. And, but what's cool is, like, at the end of the picnic, like, there was a guy who started throwing shoes in the beginning. His name was Schmitty. By the end of the, they were calling him Shitty because he was pretty shitty. And, but it was really cool because at the end, like, you know, a whole night of playing horseshoes. And of course, I'm doing great because me on Red Bull is like hyper focused, you know, must get it on the pole. Ding. You know, and at the end of the night, this guy says to me, Schmitty, he says to me, you don't drink at all. Well, let me back up. You don't drink at all? I'm like, no, I don't, Schmitty. And he's like, how did you do that? I said, well, I just gave up drinking, man. He's like, wow. I was like, hey, if you ever need help, man, give me a call. That was it. I don't mention AA because that scared me. When, you know, people walk up to me and knew I had a problem, they're like, you know, there's that AA. And I was like, huh. You know, don't talk about AA, God, you know, because I was like court committed to all that crazy jazz AA meetings. You know, I was that guy that had to sign the paper. I love when I see people walk up and they're like, you know, because they're like looking around like someone's watching them, you know. Hey, could you sign that piece of paper? And I always walk up to them. I'm like, dude, you know, you don't have to, you can forge that. Like, there's nobody. I do, because the thing is, if you're here for you, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Like, I figured it out. Like, we're anonymous. Like, Fred. Is Fred in the room? This is how it went. But anyway, I was core committed to AA, and, DUI classes, I accumulated a couple of them. I got one, and then a week later I got another when I was 22, and then I lost my license for 2 years, and I found the first girl got rid of me, and then I found a girl that drove me around for 2 years. And this is the kind of guy I was. So I didn't even have my license back. I'm getting my license back. You know, I was with this girl for 2 years. She drove me everywhere. And 2 weeks before I was supposed to get my license back, I had talked her into, I said, can you, you know, think you can front me half the money for a pickup truck? Like, I got this big job. There's always this big job. You know, I got this big job, you know, and if I get half the money, you know, will you, you know, help me out with the other half? Oh, yeah, yeah. So then I went to my dad and I'm like, hey, Dad, I got this big job coming up. If I come up with half the money, you know, would you lend me the other? So what they didn't know was, like, I got her money, showed my dad the money. He got his money, and, like, it didn't cost me anything. My dad put the truck under his – yeah, I had one of those dads. He was cool. And so he put it under his name and under his insurance, and I didn't even have a license, and I was driving that truck and going on a date with another girl. That's the guy I was. You know, I was pretty tuned up most of the time. My tolerances were pretty high. So not like I was drinking every day. I was one of those guys that would kind of drink for 3 days. And then I had to take a few days off. It's not like I said, whoa, I better take a few days off. My body just couldn't consume anymore. That's why I had a problem with AA. You know, I thought you had to be drinking every day. You know, 2 days off, man, I'm good. We're good. You know, that's why I like telling people today, like, I see people who are drinking and are eating, and I'm like, nah, lightweights. You know, I don't know about you, but I did not eat when I drank. I was a professional drinker. I was there to drink. Food just, yeah. But anyway, so we'll get on to the AA thing here. So at the age of 27, remember, I'm a moral man, and I'm feeling guilt, shame, and remorse for 12 years. I can't really put a finger on it. I couldn't tell you, like, my soul was getting yanked out of my body. But what I felt like was a big piece of crap wrapped in skin. Everybody that looked at me like, you know, like, oh, God, when's this, you know. I was one of those guys they thought you'd find wrapped around a telephone pole upside down somewhere. I don't know. My brother was a police officer. It wasn't until I got sober he told me this, but every phone call, like after 10 o'clock at night, he thought it was me, you know, come grab your brother off the side of the road, you know, because it was only affecting me, you know. And boy, we got in a lot of fights, man. Cops and robbers, I had hair down to here, and, you know, I just found out later he cared about me. Didn't matter that he had a uniform, he was just doing a job. But, so anyway, I got 4 DUIs, went to jail, came out of jail. He told me to go to AA. I went to one AA meeting, called up my best buddy, Ted, and we went out drinking that night. And that's where I met my wife, who's my wife today. Oh, God, I should have ran. But anyway, I'm kidding a little bit. So, you know, I went to this Aldi place, and they said, get a sponsor. So I went up the hill to this meeting in Doylestown, and I asked this gray-haired guy if he'd be my sponsor. And I only asked the old guy because I figured I could bullcrap this old guy. You know, like, what's the old guy know, you know? He was a drug and alcohol counselor. Yeah. Yeah, he was awesome. But this is the wonderful thing about AA. We're a bunch of BSers, man, you know. So it's like I asked this guy to be my sponsor. I had no intention of using him as a sponsor. It was just to get the people at Aldi off my back, you know. So now I got this sponsor, you know, who I'm like, he says doing 90 and 90. I'm dating this bartender who's doing all kinds of drugs and stuff. And, you know, so like, but I'm going to meetings, you know. I go to the meeting, you know, and then my girlfriend would sit on the hood of her car smoking a joint while I'm in an AA meeting, like trying to save my life. And I tell my sponsor, like, I'm dating this girl. She's a bartender, you know, and that she smokes a lot of reefer. And he's like, well, you need to get rid of her. So I go out and I say, look, I need to get rid of you. To which she would say, like, who the hell is this guy, you know, to, you know, and I would be like, well, I mean, it is bad, you know. And, but anyway, long story longer. There came a night, like, it's just nuts, man. It was not normal. There came a night where, like, once again, I told myself I wouldn't hurt this girl, you know, like, cheat on her. And it's like, we went to a party, and it's like, all when I was tuned up, it was like, I saw this girl, I kissed this girl, she saw me kiss the girl, she tried to run me over with her car. Like, normal people run into this, don't they? As drug addicts and alcoholics, like, we do live a colorful life. So I get into this car. You know, finally she comes back. And I threw – that was the last drink I had. It's over 18 years. And I don't remember what drink it was. I remember it was green, like a green glass. Could have been a beer. I don't know what it was. But when we were driving in her car, I said to her, I said I'm going to join AA. Now, mind you, I've been going to meetings. Bullshit my sponsor back on to a 90 and 90. One time he asked me, so these meetings you're going to, where are they? I'm like, you know, over in East Jibip, you know, around the corner. And he's like, go get the booklet and show me where. And I was like he knew I was so full of crap. But that night I told Ricky, I said, I'm going to join AA. Like, I just feel like I have to do this. Now, mind you, every once in a while, I'd load this gun. I'd go home with the jags, you know, the remorse, the guilt. And I didn't want to die. I just didn't know how to live with what all this crazy. So I got this shotgun, and it's a small shotgun. It's for, like, anyway. And I'd stick it in my mouth, and I would cry. And I would cry. And I would envision, I mean, I'm, you know, once again, I'm living back at mom and dad's house, sleeping on the banana splits. It's a bunk bed. Like, I'm, you know, I'm sleeping on a bunk bed, you know, because I'm a winner. At 27 years old, I'm back living with mom and dad, sleeping on banana splits sheets. And it was nuts. But anyway, so that next day I went into AA and I said to my sponsor, I'm like, look, I've been bullshitting you. I haven't been going to a 90, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, no, I know. And I'm like, what? He's like, no. Like, even though he was older, he just looked at me. He's like, I am you and you are me. Like, I know exactly what you're doing. And I was like, damn. You know? But the cool thing about coming into AA and knowing I wanted to be here was my sponsor said, you never have to cheat or lie or steal again, Jay. Like some people you hear like their first year. You ever hear somebody say, oh, my first year sucked so bad. That wasn't me, brother. Like when my sponsor told me I didn't have to lie, cheat, or steal, a big weight fell off my shoulders. Because a big reason why I felt like a big piece of crap wrapped in skin is because my whole life was a lie. And I had to remember all the lies I told, and I had to remember, like, it was brutal. And when he told me I didn't have to do any of that anymore, like, it was like, whew, thank God. That's a lot of work, you know? And then another old guy, so Bill McDee, he's still my sponsor. And then his sponsor was some old dude who's still alive. Now, mind you, my oldest son, his middle name, William, is after my sponsor. And my second son, the crazy cat who's throwing matches on my rug, burned my house down. Well, son of a bitch. His middle name's Lee, after my sponsor's sponsor. But anyway, so this other guy says to me, says, Jay, if you always tell the truth, you never have to remember what you said. Like, they were telling me this stuff, and it's like, so right off the gate, man, I was like, I like this place, man. Like, I like this place. And thank God I hooked up with these old guys, and I wanted it because, you know, I go to meetings now, and I see the young guys get with the young guys, and I, you know, and it's just no good. Like, thank God I got together with these old guys because these old guys were, like, so direct to me. It hurt my feelings. It did. They're like, you're an asshole. That hurt. But what happened to me is, so I went to meetings every day, probably for 3 years. This girl that I was dating, it was the barmaid. I told her I couldn't date her anymore because she was drinking. She got sober 3 days after I got sober. And then she started going to meetings. And then, so this is what it looked like. So we're walking up to the meeting, and she, like, goes to hold my hand. And I'm like, no, 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 no. I've seen too many of those people. You know, the guy and the girl holding hands, walking in the meeting, and then they're like groping each other. I'm not yelling at you guys right there. Look, look, look. She's like, get your hand off my ass. Get your hand off my ass. But, so like, I didn't hold her hand, and she got upset at me, and I said, listen, I want you to sit on the other side of the room, and I'm going to sit on the other side of the room. Because you guys got to understand, like, that gun, that trigger, that, like, that was close. That was real close. And I didn't want to die, you know? And I wasn't about to let... And I knew I was serious about this stuff because, like, a woman, women always had a weird effect on me. And for me to say that to a woman, like, man, I was serious. So she sat on the other room with on the other side of the room with a resentment. And I sat on the other side of the room trying to figure out how not to die. That's it. You know, these old guys were awesome in my life. When it says, like, to thine own self be true, like, the thing was, like, I stopped bullshitting myself, you know? And I started telling the guys, like, my sponsor's like, so what are you thinking? Like, I'm like, you really want to know what I'm thinking? Because my head was off the charts. They called me Ricochet Rabbit because I was like, I've slowed down a bit. People think I'm out of my mind. If you come down to my business, like I get passionate about what I do. And I'm blah, 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 blah. But anyway, but this is the crazy thing. So I went to meetings like every day for 3 years, and I never went through the steps. I thought this, it was weird. It's like there was like a window of opportunity. I could have gone through the steps because I was in enough pain, but I don't know, that pain kind of, you know, monetarily, I didn't drink anymore, so I could go to work and I could make money. I don't know, it was just strange. So, you know, I go to meetings and we read, you know, how it works, and I thought that was just for, like, sicker people, you know, like you. Guy groping his woman's butt. But anyway, like I did, I just thought like, all right, let's get this over with. You know, I thought it was just something you read at every meeting, like how it works. Yeah, yeah, how it works, blah, 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 you know. And it's not like I didn't learn any lessons like for the first 10 years of my sobriety, because I did, I learned a lot of life lessons and I did become better at a lot of things. But you ever hear somebody say they're working on their character defects? Yeah, 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 yeah. Have you ever been through the steps? No. But I'm working on them character defects that I have no idea what they are. I'm just speaking for me. You know, I went to step study meetings to study steps that I never did. And we'd read a paragraph and everybody would share of what their interpretation of that paragraph was. What? All right, so this is how it happened. So I got a sponsor. Or a sponsee, I was sponsoring. I'd never been through the steps, you know, but I got some money. I got, you know, my license back. I got, you know, I looked like I was doing okay. And so I'm sponsoring two guys. I've never been through the steps. And this one guy was like ready to kill himself or kill people. Like he was like homicidal. And I finally said like, dude, I don't know what to do for you. Like, I don't know. I don't have what you need. But see, I was coming up to this meeting and there were some guys walking around with glossy eyes, not all messed up, you know, like they kind of had like a little pep in their step. And I said, and I heard about these guys going through the steps. And I said, I think you need to go and sit with one of these guys. I think they have what you need. And he wouldn't go through the steps with this one guy I told him to go through the steps with. So this guy, Joe M, God, I hate not using last names, this Irish fella who's now in Colorado, he was a city kid when we first got sober together. We go fishing. He had no idea with fishing. He's like, yeah, these trout living here all year. I'm like, no, they die. Like, this water's so polluted, dude. Like, like we're in this big argument. Like, these are the life lessons I learned. Not going through the steps. So here's this city slicker, a country kid, and we're like shouting across the water, you know, he's telling me how these fish live. And I'm like, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. Go back to the city, you know. And I stopped for a second and I thought, I can either be a friend to this guy and have this guy a friend to me, or I can keep this argument going. And it was like the first time I realized like, do you need to be right? Or do you know what I'm saying? And we've been friends since, but anyway, He moved away, living a pseudo life, kids, you know. He came back to speak at this meeting, and when he spoke, man, he was a different guy. And it was undeniable to me, you know, that the steps had like done something to him. So he walked out that door back there, and my sponsee was standing right here, and the guy I wanted him to go through the steps with was standing there. And I thought to myself, if I asked Joe to take me through the steps in front of Dano, maybe that's just what he needs to see in order to, anyway. So I asked Joe to take me through the steps. And of course he said he's only in town for a couple days. We can go down to his parents' shore house. And like, I was like, dude, my schedule is booked. So I called my wife and I was like, hey, Joe said he could go through the steps with me, but I got like, he only has 2 days. And she's like, your schedule is cleared. You know, 'cause I was special. See these character defects that I was working on that I had no idea that they were there? Yeah, I was a bit of an asshole. Yeah, yeah. Because of these character defects and because I was living in fear. I didn't know any of this. You know, so I went down to the shore and it was amazing, you know. I was scared. Like, what's going to happen when I go through the steps? I was one of those guys. Can I curse anymore? Like, what kind of guy am I going to turn into? You know, am I going to like run through daisies and like, I don't know, man. I was like, the unknown scares me. So we go down to a shore house and we just went right to it, man. He opened up the book. We went on the back porch and he's going through and he's talking about, you know, and step one and step two, step three, set of step three, the set of prayer. At 5 o'clock in the morning at the bottom of the fifth, we went and got some sleep. Now I woke up at 10 o'clock in the morning. Now, mind you, I'm at my fifth step. So I've been through my fourth step. So this is where I wrote down my fears list and I wrote down my resentment list. And like, basically he connected all these dots. So like before I went to bed, he was like this. He's like, do you see where you're like the biggest asshole going? Like, really? You know, he's like, do you see? Because this is how crazy it was. These are the character defects that I had no clue I had. Okay. So I have a fear. I have a fear that my wife is going to leave me, you know, because I was a bit of a nutcase. So I tell my fear to Joe. Joe, I got a fear. It's my main fear. My wife's going to leave me. He's like, well, what'd you do about it? I'm like, what do you mean what I do about it? You know, because like I'm sure all your parents taught you proper ways to communicate with your spouse, right? You know, so Joe says, so how did you communicate with your wife that you were afraid she was going to leave? You know, did you ask her? Did you say, you know, is there? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, you had to do something. He says, did you pull away? Yeah, I pulled away. He says, good. And he goes back and he asked me about these other relationships in my life, these girls. And he said, did you pull away from them too? I was like, oh my God. You know, the character defects, you know, that I was working on that I had no idea were there. So Joe points out to me, he says, so I had this fear that my wife was going to leave me. So what I did is I pulled away from her. And then he goes, okay. He says, how do you think she felt? Well, I never thought of that because I was so self-centered, absorbed in my own crazy crap. I never even thought about that. So he paints me a picture. He says, so Jay, you have a fear. You're perpetuating. You're making your fear happen. He says, you pull away, but you can't communicate. So your wife doesn't understand what's happening. So you pull away. She thinks she don't love her anymore. So what does she do? Because she was taught how to communicate so well with her spouse. She pulls away. So now what you have is a marriage that just absolutely dissolves. And now we both have resentments towards you. It was amazing. You know, when he showed me that, I was like, oh my God. All I can tell you, so I went to bed at 5 o'clock in the morning, the bottom of the fifth. And woke up at 10 o'clock, packed my bags. Like, I'm raw. I'm raw. You know, like Joe has just exposed me for the man that I am. But the cool thing is, like, I can either continue being that man or I can do some things to change that. But I get in his truck because I'm scared. And I'm driving out of the shore. And I remember I do carpentry work and stuff, so I don't wear a wedding band so it doesn't yank my finger off my hand. And I had lost my wedding band in my workshop. And I had found my wedding band, like, the day before I asked Joe to take me through the steps. And I'm boogieing out, man, and my ring is just blaring. The sun's blaring off this ring, and the phone rings, and it's my wife. And I was like, yeah? She goes, how's it going down there? I was like, nah, it's all right. And you could hear, like, the disappointment. You know, she's like, oh, are you coming home soon? And I was like, yeah, I'll be home soon. Okay. So I'm driving. I'm almost out of wherever it is, Long Beach, I don't know, whatever. But I'm almost out of the town, and a thought came to me. Jay, this is the only chance you've ever had to truly be a man. Turn this truck around and get to being a man. Like, that's what I thought. I turned the truck around. I went. Of course, you got to go to Wawa and get a couple cups of coffee and a pack of the smokes that he smokes. Because when I pulled up, he's standing on the front porch, and he's like, man, I thought you took off. I was like, no, a couple cups of coffee. Yeah, come on. Who would have done that? Come on. You know, I'm like, Joe, you know. So we finished up the steps, and it was just amazing. It was amazing. You know, it was uncomfortable being with a person that's basically telling me, you know, who and what I am under no uncertain terms. But the amazing thing is now I have a plan. I have a plan to go out in my life and not have to be that person. And that gave me hope. I had so much hope. All I can tell you is, like, when they say in the big book, like, it says shot out of a cannon. Like, I'm telling you, man, it was night and day. Like, how cool is it to actually now step out into the world and know I have a choice on how to be? I don't have to be that guy anymore. believe me, I can be that guy. That's that tangled up in my underwear kind of stuff, you know? So, you know, I go back home and, you know, it's amazing. Like Joe said to me, you love your wife? I said, I love my wife. He says, this is like the non-AA thing he told me. He says, as I'm leaving, he's like, you ever do the dishes? You know, and I'm like, yeah, I do the dishes all the time. He says, you strike me as the kind of individual who's clanking them dishes to let her know how happy you are to do them. And I was like, man, that's me. You know, yeah, I'll do these dishes. Clankety, clankety, clank, clank, clank. He says, you go home. He says, you do those dishes and show your love through your actions. Do those dishes because you love her. And as you're doing the dishes, say to yourself, I'm doing this because, and he says, don't do them so it frees up time so you can be with her. You know, he says, just do them because that's your action. That's showing your love. Empty the trash cans you never saw. You know, I mean, I never even thought to empty the trash can in the bathroom. You know what I'm saying? I just never thought like that. And I came back from the steps and my wife, she ended up like she was bawling all the time. I'm cleaning trash cans. I'm washing dishes, humming and she saw there was this amazing change in me. But she's crying all the time, telling me not to empty the trash cans, not to do this. You understand, because, she didn't understand. Remember that wedge in our marriage that we went this way? She had done some stuff that now, all of a sudden, she had the man in her life that she had always wanted. And she had done some stuff that made her feel pretty guilty. And it wasn't until she went through the steps that some stuff came out. But all I can tell you is the steps, the way I live my life today, you know, I've been through a lot of painful stuff. I've been through some, I was just talking to, where's the dude? Where are you, dude? Where's my, Oh, yeah. You know, he asked me how I was. You know, life to me, it's up, it's down, it's good, it's bad, it's, you know, life is life. You know, I got four kids, you know. I mean, thank God all this stuff didn't happen at once or I would have ran, you know. But I mean, 18 years ago, I lived in a trailer in the woods and I never wanted any more. I was that guy, you know. I go to meetings and I go home and I'm just grateful to be alive. I lived in a little trailer with this girl and, you know, I just went to meetings and I was just grateful. I was real grateful to be alive, you know, and as the years went on, I mean, it's just nuts what happened in AA. You know how they say, do the next right thing, do good things and good things will happen to you. You know, this is the crazy thing. A lot of guys come into AA, a lot of girls come into AA, you know, and it's not about just not drinking and not drugging. And I'm going to speak for me. I can be just as much of a thief, a cheat, and a liar today. If anything, better. The old guys used to say, what happens when you get a horse thief sober? You get a better horse thief. You know? And AA is the bottom of the barrel. There is no other place to go except for jails, institutions, and death. So, here we have a group of guys like me and gals like me, not very moral, you know. But the thing that I needed to change, because why I drank so much and why I loaded that gun is because I didn't like me very much, you know. So I knew when I came into AA, I had to do things different. You know, I was that guy that would look at the girl and, you know, rape a girl with my eyes. And I don't mean that in that sense, but I did. I would look at a girl and, you know, and what I realized over, and without the steps, I mean, what I realized is you know, I'm sitting on a beach. You ever sit on the beach? Why I look at you is you remind me of me a little bit. I don't know why. You haven't even said anything. You just have that guilty look on your face, you know. But I was that guy on the beach with my girlfriend sitting next to me, and I got the shades on, and my eyes are going, scanning, you know, right? But, the thought occurred to me one time, how would I feel if she was doing that? I don't like that. So why would I do it? You know, and those things, you know, started to take shape. It didn't happen overnight. I had to remind myself. And then I saw a sign. I started, reading church signs. This one church sign said, being faithful without anybody knowing about it. And what that meant to me was, if I see a nice, a good-looking woman, I can acknowledge that person, that woman, as a good-looking woman, and then I can go right back to, I'm very grateful to have the woman that I have in my life. Like, it's like I had to train myself. But all I can say is the steps, you know, I have four kids. What time do I got? I've got a minute. Do I have a minute? All right, I'm going to shut up with this. So this is the non-spiritual me, because it happens. You know, practice these principles in all our affairs. Like, I try my best, but some days I'm just really, really human. And so my son Cooper one day, so this is the non-spiritual me. So I'm all wrapped up in business, running around. Things aren't going so good. And I see my son out of the corner of my eye climbing up on this bench in the backyard. He wants to get higher on this rope swing. And the bench kicks out. And what it looks like his legs went through the slats and broke both of his legs. And he's just laying there on the ground. And this is the dad he got. What the heck? What are you doing? My God, what's your problem? I can't believe it. Like, yeah. Can you imagine if that was my God? I mess up. What the heck? You know. But that's the dad that he got. And then Ricky come running out, and she pushed me off to the side. She's like, go do something, you know? And then with tender, loving hands, she made sure he was okay. He didn't end up breaking his legs. So that was the me, that the unspiritual me, who's worried about all kinds of stuff and not having a faith that God's leading me in a good direction. So 2 days later, same kid, that little craphead Cooper, my son, who's just like me, he's good looking. That didn't make you laugh. So he's riding his little 50 motorcycle, and we got like a 10-acre. I could tell you all this, the stuff that I accumulated being sober, but it's this that's awesome. That stuff could go away tomorrow, and I want this. But he's riding this little 50 because I didn't have anything as a kid. So my kids are like, hey, Dad, I'd really like, yeah, I'll get you a motorcycle. I'm that guy, you know, because I'm a 45-year-old kid, like, you know. So Cooper's blaring across the lawn on his 50, and I had a bunch of tobacco poles, these big poles, and I collected a big, big pile of them. And one of them was sticking out almost like a jouster's pole. And I had run into the house I come out of the door into the garage, and my kid's like 300 yards away from me, laying on the grass, and I see his motorcycle stuck in these poles, and I just hear him, Dad, you know, I don't remember running to him. It was like that, but all I remember saying was, God, he's yours. He's yours. I don't remember running to him, but I remember like opening up his face mask, and he was white, and he said his side hurt, and the motorcycle's still running, stuck into this thing, and there's one pole. And I said, did you fall off? He says, no, Dad, like the throttle stuck. And he just run right in that pole, stuck him right in the right here, and just threw him off. And but the dad he got that day was the dad he should get every day. You know, like I just held his hand. I said he was okay. You know, I went up and got the car. I come back, take him over to the hospital. And the whole time, like absolutely calm. Just tell him I love him. Because you understand, like, I thought I might lose him. And, like, I just want him to have a loving dad. And if he's going to pass, I just want him to have love. Mom was a mess. It was like a reversal. You know, but we went to Grandview, and they took an X-ray, and he was bleeding. His liver was lacerated, and there was blood. And so within a couple minutes, we're in an ambulance going 80 mile an hour to the Lehigh Trauma Unit. Mom is in her car. This is the weird thing. Hey, Coop, who do you want? You know, so your son's got. Who do you want to ride with you? Like, usually I'm not, he wouldn't have picked me. And he's like, please, Dad, will you ride with me? And mom's in her car behind us. We're going 85 mile an hour through red lights, and mom is this far off the bumper of that ambulance. They kept saying, "Will you please call your wife and tell her she's not allowed to run red lights?" So I would dial the number and I said, "You tell her." Because there, look, I know if it was me, I'd be running them. So Cooper ends up in the trauma unit at Lehigh. I have a priest. I was wearing a cross around my neck, and he says, "What denomination am I?" I said, "I just believe," and because they thought he was going to die. And the awesome thing is, the next morning, we stayed over, and the next morning, the bleeding had stopped. It was just a pretty wild experience, So today I try to practice the principles in all my affairs. And when I do, that's the dad I am and that's the husband I am. But I fall short, Someday you might pull out in front of me and I'd be like, "What the?" And then you'd be like, "You tangled up in your underwear." But all I can say is, if you're sitting in this room and you haven't gone through the steps, find somebody that's been through the steps and go through the steps with them. And do that work and figure out what those character defects are. Because the cool thing is, until you know what your character defects are, you are stuck repeating them over and over. And you don't even know it. It's like self-sabotaging your own life. So, if you haven't been through the steps, I highly recommend, and I'll say this and shut up, my sponsor told me one time, he suggested something to me, and I'm that rebellious guy, tell me to sit down, I want to stand up, but my sponsor recommended I do something. I said, "You tell me what to do." He says, "Put it this way, Jay, I'm suggesting to you, like I'm pushing you out of an airplane, and I'm suggesting you pull the ripcord." And I was like, "Oh, he means business on that one." So go through the steps and keep going to AA. And thanks, guys.